Right. Right. We do it in one take.
I'm not going to stop and start and stop and start. So Mr.
Producer,
not my flow.
Mr. Producer's time is very valuable.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields.
What a treat we have today. First of all, welcome back, Scott.
Thank you, Casey.
You've been gone on an extended European vacation for quite some time.
No, I wasn't in Europe. I was in Alaska. That's in the U.S.
And then you had a health vacation.
So I had a holiday and then an extended holiday as a result of catching the COVID on the holiday.
Oh, correct.
So I was out and then traveling.
Right, for a week
for
after
work,
that.
After the Independence Day holiday.
Right, correct.
Which we're going to talk about in another episode,
right,
if we
right.
haven't already talked about
if you
it
can
by
remember
the time
it,
we
right.
cut this. So.
Exactly.
But yes,
but today
happy
we
to
have
be
a,
back.
We
yes.
have a very, very special guest.
I'm not
guest.
The special guest. No.
No, you're not. No, sorry. I didn't mean to insinuate that.
Indeed.
We have a very special guest in the studio today, Mr. Howard DeVos, at large city council member for the city of Columbia. Howard, welcome back.
Well, it's great to be back in the building.
That's exactly right. We're glad to have you. We could tell. I was sitting in my office, and I could tell that you had come out of your meeting because I heard everybody screaming, and they were like, "How are you?" They were so excited to see you.
Lots of good friends over here.
That's right.
It's great to come back, and I'm interested to see that you've got the same mess on the tables getting ready for the annual meeting.
Yes.
You got all the stuff spread out, and downstairs is full of boxes. We're getting ready to have a great time in Greenville next week.
Packet stuffing is tomorrow.
Oh,
good. Stuffing packets tomorrow.
It's the same.
I think that's right.
It's the same thing, you know, like it's the same process and some things don't change. That's for sure.
When I started here, we had to bring our family members in to do the stuffing. We didn't have enough staff.
Right.
We only had eight people.
That's right.
And that would be an annual thing with the kids would come in and the wives would come in and we would stuff and then Don Ray would take us to lunch.
Casey, tell our listener who's new, either to the municipal world or to the podcast, who Howard is and why he knows so much about the annual meeting
and the rigors
of getting ready.
I do want to get into your career. I want to talk about Sherall and I want to talk about everything. But Howard, while he is the current at-large city council member for City of Columbia, Howard is also the former executive director for the Municipal Association of South Carolina. How long were you... How long did you work here? And then
22 years, mm-hmm. and I was executive director from 1992 to 2008.
Right.
So
Howard hired me. What a great decision!
Yeah,
I tell you, that's one of my better choices.
Well,
yes.
Yeah.
All right, Scott. Yeah, I was about to say, no, don't give me the hesitant. Give me the, yeah.
By and large, yes.
Amazing. I swear. So, Howard, I know that you listen to the podcast. So, you know that at the very beginning, I try to kind of work in a trivia question because I've tried to stump Scott.
Do you listen to the podcast?
I can.
I have listened to a couple.
There okay. You go. All right. You're not a regular listener,
but
you are familiar with it. Okay,
so, I'm working.
Yeah. Yeah, he's busy working. He ain't got time to listen to a podcast.
He's answering my calls about rundown homes in my neighborhood.
Constituent services. He's always going to answer a constituent call.
So I always try to stump Scott every time. And it's about a specific, I mean, it can be about anything. But Mr. Producer gives me a list and whatever trivia question he thinks would be good for this week. So this, in your honor, is the trivia question this week. So I'll give you time to think about it.
Okay.
And toward the end of the episode, you'll give me an answer. Or Scott, either one. The City of Columbia's flag was adopted in 2020, and it features three stripes of a different color blue. What do these represent?
The three.
Don't say anything.
Don't answer yet.
Scott, I want you to think about
it. It's called
a
tease. Yeah,
I know Howard knows it.
It's a tease.
So don't say anything. We're going to see if we can get Scott on this one.
I'm pretty sure I know the answer.
If there's a list of, if it's like, give me all the cities that start with the letter B.
Well, let's add to the question since I think he knows the answer to the first part of it.
I think I know.
What is the shape of the three colors?
The shape of the three colors. Now that I would not know.
I got him on
that. I ain't got my phone on me, so I won't be able to answer that.
No, you can't Google it.
Right. I never Google the answers.
So Howard, let's talk about, let's go back when you first ran for office.
1973.
In 1973.
30 years old.
You were 30, you were married, you had kids.
Two.
And you lived in Chiral.
I was a native of Chiral and ran for my first election in 1973.
What made you run, Howard? You owned a hardware store, right?
Well, I had intended to be involved in municipal politics when I was in high school.
Okay.
I saw things in Chiral that needed to be done.
Sure.
And I thought I could do them. And so when I went to the I got ready to go to the Citadel, my partner in the hardware business, who was my cousin, I said, what do I need to major in? Thinking he was going to tell me to take a business major. He said, right. You can major anything you wanted to major in because you're going to be in the hardware business and it'll be fun. So I said, well, I'm going to major in political science because I wanted to be involved in politics.
Right.
There were two or three projects around Chiral that I thought I could have an impact on. And so I went to the Citadel, majored in political science, did my term in the Air Force, came back and got involved immediately in mm-hmm. in social stuff, Chamber of Commerce,
right.
Bicentennial, Tricentennial, all of it was happening before I ran in 73. And we expanded this Chiral City Council from 4 to 7. From 5 to 7 uh-huh. In that year. And so we had two new seats, and I got one of those two new seats.
Right.
I led the ticket, but one of us had to have a 2-year term, and one of us had to have a 4-year term. And so the city attorney, Senator Harris at the time, mm-hmm. said, all right, Howard, you're going to have an easy election, so you're going to have a 2-year term and do it again in 2 years.
Oh, golly.
I had 5 elections in Chiral on my time there.
So how long were you on council before you ran for mayor?
From 74 to 80, mm-hmm. I was on council, and then from 80 to 86, I was mayor.
And Howard, that your entry into local politics and local government then corresponded quite nicely with the enactment of the Home Rule Act.
Exactly.
And how that transitioned into our governance now that we continue to have to squabble over.
I remember we were facing the question of what form of government would you have,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. you were supposed to pick the one most nearly.
Right.
So we picked the strong mayor form, which we had been running under. And
sure.
I think it works well for cities the size of Chiral. Sure. First thing I did when I got to be mayor was to hire a professional administrator,
right.
Bill Taylor.
Yep.
Right.
And
right.
That was a great decision to get a professional in there. As a matter of fact, Casey, I am working on a paper right now mm-hmm. For my colleagues on the city council about property taxes in South Carolina. And I'm using a speech that I made in 2008 to the municipal finance offices and correct yep. treasurers. And it starts in 1973, because in 1975 we had the tax equalization, mm-hmm. Which was a result of the state chamber of commerce suing the state legislature over the taxes that were inordinately placed on the manufacturing mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. not on the 4% and 6%.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it starts in that year, and I trace it all the way up to – I added another paragraph or two to the speech now, so it covers up to where we are now and showing how the state legislature has screwed up the tax system right. in South Carolina. And the property tax systems are hard to – it's going to be hard to undo that.
Well, and mm-hmm. I don't know, Howard, that legislators today would characterize it the same way that you did. But they would most all of them that are there now, I would say, agree that the property tax, that Act 388 has really made property taxes mm-hmm. much less equitable mm-hmm. And is a huge problem. However, none of them are so far willing to tackle the problem and move forward. There are a couple who would like to deal with it,
but
in large part, they're like, hey, you know, they're safe in saying that because they didn't vote for it. Right.
They weren't there to vote for it. There are now just a handful of,
right.
you know, incumbents of yeah. seated members that were there in 06.
Right.
That's right.
And 08 when we yeah. were working on right. that.
But there, none of them, not a core group or a critical mass of them have come together to want to try and do anything about it yet. So mm-hmm.
Doing something about it's going to be hard to do,
right?
Because some of it's been put in the Constitution.
Yeah, that's right.
The 15% limitation is a major problem, and it's been put in.
You can't. It's going to be tough to put that toothpaste back in the tube.
So you were mayor of Sherrall, and then you were appointed by Governor Riley, right?
Governor Riley appointed me to what was the South Carolina Tax Commission at mm-hmm. that time, and he asked me to come on down to Columbia in May of 86 to help him through the last year of his term. He was mm-hmm. he was the first governor to go 8 years, and the people that had been with him for 7 years were leaving to get permanent jobs,
right.
And so he needed some help, and I came in. I was probably could be called his body man.
Right.
I had to spend a lot of time with him. I had to prepare all of the proper preparations for his travels and all, and went with him and handled things that people handed him to free his hands up. So that was a very good time. And then I went on the tax commission in January of 86. In January of 87, the most important thing was the election in November of 86, when mm-hmm. my term was a short term to fill the unexpired term of Jack Weeks, who was on there, and I was going to get a 6-year term from Mike Daniels, who was going to become the governor.
Right, right.
Well, mm-hmm. in November, the people decided that Carol Campbell was going to become the governor.
That's yep. right.
And so the day after, the morning after that election, about 6 o'clock in the morning, my predecessor, Don Ray, called me and said, Don never introduced himself when he made a phone call. He just starts talking.
I do the same.
So I picked up the telephone about 6 o'clock in the morning, and Don Ray said, "You're not going to have a job. Why don't you come to work for the Municipal Association?"
That's a nice intro. I like that. You're about to be fired.
Even though I was sleepy, I had a good enough sense to say, "That sounded like a deal."
Yeah, exactly. I'll take it.
I take it. And so the rest is history.
And so you came to the association as the legislative person, right? You
were the Director of Intergovernmental Relations.
Mm-hmm. And then, which is what Scott does now.
I did it a lot better.
We
were very successful.
I don't doubt that at all. As you know, Casey, and we've talked about before, I have no employable skills,
so I don't doubt that at all. We're gonna have to work on that.
Indeed.
And you were here up until your retirement in 2008.
That's right. That's correct.
And you went from the intergovernmental director of intergovernmental relations to executive director right after Don retired.
That is true.
And how would you? After all you've done, I mean, you have had such a wonderful career, all focused on local government. Tell me what has been your favorite part. What do you think has really, what will you take with you when you retire?
Well, I think it is probably two parts of that.
No, okay.
I've got about 16 years of that is with elective office.
Right,
and
right.
I think dealing with the people in elective office and being able to take care of their problems, as mm-hmm. I have
yes.
one sitting beside me,
absolutely.
Who's a frequent caller.
That's
right. But being able to answer the phone, find out what the problem is, and know how to take care of it and get those problems taken care of is something I've always done.
Mm-hmm.
When I got out of the Air Force, I was taught in the Air Force to answer the phone, Howard Duvall. And so when I got to the Sherrall Hardware, it was Howard Duvall, Sherrall Hardware, can I help you?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And that's what I've done for 50 years now is answer the phone, tell them who I am, and can mm-hmm. I help you?
Right.
And I get frequent calls. The calls are not as bad now because we fixed a lot of the water problems. But
right.
But Howard, you get frequent calls because you get it done. You are the person that you can call and get it done. That's why people call you. You're so good at it.
I think that's a good thing. So that's the political side. I enjoy doing the constituent service and working with the staff. We've got a tremendous staff. I had a tremendous staff in Sherrall. I got a tremendous staff right here in the city of Columbia. Wonderful people to work with. It took me probably a year after I got elected to let them understand that I was there to be their friend.
Right.
And I wanted to work with them, not being opposed to them.
I was going to say, was there a perception that you were there to critique what the city of Columbia had been doing?
Howard did run, and he was kind of adversarial, when he ran.
And the mayor, the sitting mayor at the time, had supported two people that ran against Ed and I.
Right.
Yeah.
So we upset two of the mayor's choices, and so there was a lot of tension.
Sure.
As we got on the thing as to what are these two new fellas going to do.
Right.
And it's, we actually had a retreat in February after I won that first election, and the retreat did what it was supposed to do. It got us all to say how we felt about things, and we all – you know, Steve and I have known each other. He calls me his first boss.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to do anything to hurt Steve Benjamin, but there was still that tension there.
Sure.
And so we got over that. The staff didn't know exactly what I was going to do. And one good thing is they don't know how much I know or how much I don't know.
Right.
And they assumed I know a lot. So
That was a good assumption.
And Howard, good assumption. I appreciate you making the point that the retreat was helpful in building those relationships and that trust on the council. Because that, you know, that's something that we do for cities and towns across the state is help facilitate those retreats and those planning opportunities.
Right.
And I think we have a lot of cities and towns that engage in that exercise, but probably not nearly enough. And I think that testimony to the efficacy of those efforts is really, really hits home for me.
I have seen that work not only in while I was with the association, but several times on my 8 years on Columbia City Council.
Sure.
We've had a retreat every year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it really does help gel. It helps set the stage for what's going to happen in the near term, the next year for the city manager.
Yep.
But it lets you get projects on the board that might be 3 years, 4 years downstream, but we have a plan to put them on the capital improvement project.
I always enjoyed facilitating those when I was a field services manager, and my successors have done a great job continuing to do that. Talk, Howard, a little bit. Your time with the association when you were the legislative guy and then the executive director, you were in the trenches in the midst of the turnover of the General Assembly from a Democrat-controlled body to now a Republican-controlled body.
From a one-party to a two-party.
Right.
From a two-party to another party.
Talk about that transition and your observations as that was happening and what you thought was going on and how the association was going to have to adjust to its business to that new dynamic.
Well, that's a good point, and it's in my speech on taxes, too, because in 1992 – and I need to come back and do another podcast just on the tax
absolutely.
Situation.
I'd love it.
100%.
But one of the things that's important about the tax situation was the Equalization Act. It was passed in 1975, required everything to be put on the tax rolls at fair market value, at appraised value. But in 1992, after you'd had two reassessments, one of them in 80, another one was scheduled in 85, did not happen because they knew it was going to raise the taxes on the 4%ers and the 6%ers. Didn't happen until the late 1980s. Hugo came in 89,
yep.
So Charleston mm-hmm. and Greenville and most of the coastal mm-hmm. area said, we can't do a reassessment now.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so it was early 90s that we had another reappraisal, and that kicked in the tax revolt.
Right. Mm-hmm.
1992, every Republican running for office stood on the steps of the State House and said, we will do away with property taxes if you elect us. And the people did. So that was the big change that pushed the state of South Carolina from kind of a Democrat mm-hmm. majority mm-hmm. into a Republican majority. And I'm not sure if they were really should be labeled Democrats and Republicans, but that's mm-hmm. the way the system works.
At that time, yeah. Yeah, it was difficult to discern the difference between the two.
And some of them were the same people.
Exactly.
A lot of them were elected as Democrats and decided they would become Republicans after they saw what happened in 92.
Exactly. Everybody started as a Democrat, right?
That's right.
And then, of course, the congressional elections of 94 when Congress goes to the Republicans for the first time in, 120 mm-hmm. years, something like that, kind of continue to push that way forward, mm-hmm. right?
Well, Scott, you asked how the association,
yeah.
mm-hmm. what was different with the association.
Right.
Before 1992, the relationships that Don Ray and others had built in the legislature and that I helped cement with legislation was productive. We had go-to people in the mm-hmm. House and the Senate that were very pro-municipal government,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and we were able to pass some meaningful legislation. So one of the things I passed when we first got in there was annexation law. The first mm-hmm. annexation changes we had in a long time came right after I started working. The first project that Don Ray put me on was to help pass the local option sales tax.
Mm, yeah, yep. That was a big one.
I came on in 87. We actually got it passed in 90, but that was a very heavy lift.
Yes.
Yep, it was.
To get that passed.
Even then.
But it, as a new lobbyist, it was exciting to me to have something that you were for, a positive piece of legislation,
yes.
and put together the things working with Jim Fields and others.
Right, that's right.
Casey's heard me say many times over the years, I wish we could get everybody, all of our members, to be for something
right.
together.
Yeah. Instead of
which
just
is
trying to
very
stop
difficult.
It.
It's hard.
It's easy to get people to come out and be against something.
Yeah.
That's
mm-hmm.
much more easier than to get everybody pulling in the same direction for something.
Well, the local option sales tax was one of the ones that we got general support on. But the point I was going to make is that it was so much more pleasing to me to be over there and be for something
yes.
that was positive.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So
absolutely.
Past that 1990, and I said, well, we need to get another thing that would be positive for the citizens. And so the staff, including Roy Bates and Sid Thomas and all said, well, why don't we change do the consolidation of the comprehensive planning codes in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. We have Title IV, we have Title V, we have mm-hmm. Title VI, and we need to put those into one comprehensive piece of legislation.
Sure.
Man, this is going to be easy.
Right.
who would be opposed
to
making it better
right.
by consolidating it all so you'd know you wouldn't have to know.
Yeah.
We had people, Charleston, a good example, they would pick things out of Title VI they liked and they'd pick Title V that they liked
yeah.
and put it all together in one piece of of ordinance. And so we needed to have it consolidated. So we got that thing together. We thought we had put everybody together in support of it,
mm-hmm.
but then the realtors came out. And then the home builders came out, mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. other special interest groups came
yeah.
out. And so it became a pretty big struggle, and
yeah.
we what year did it finally pass? Like 95?
Yeah, it sounds right, 94, 95.
94, 95.
Chapter 29 was born.
Yeah, Chapter 29 was born. It was actually passed and vetoed by Governor Campbell.
Hmm.
But we went back the next year and corrected the problem that caused it to be vetoed.
That's fair.
And it passed very early in the session. So in 1990, we got 1995, mm-hmm. we got it, and you had to have it done by 19. Let's see.
Probably would have had it.
2000?
Yeah, 2000. Late, either 99, yeah, 2000, yeah. something like that. Yeah, that makes sense.
But that's the type of thing that is exciting for those of us that are in the trenches over there to get a piece of legislation,
yep.
work
very
on it,
so.
Make all the compromises, mm-hmm. get everybody together, and see it go through the process.
And I think, you say that, and I think this year was probably one of the few years since I've been lobbying that I had that feeling because we got several things done this year that
we sure
we were in favor of and wanted as a part of our initiatives, and that is a lot more fun than going over there and just being
just fighting
against
it all the time.
So, when you can play offense instead of defense, it's a lot different on the lobbyist.
100%.
And I much rather go over there with a good piece of legislation and do what is necessary to get it through.
How helpful were members in that effort?
Well, the members are always key.
Yeah.
I mean, we had very active membership, especially for some of our larger cities. We had Mayor Riley down in Charleston that was almost like a member of the staff.
Yes.
He was frequently involved in our legislation, and I would get a phone call most days before I went over to the State House about what he thought we should be doing.
Right.
And there were others like that, too.
That's good.
So, it's I think it's key to get the support. Now, you talked about trying to get all your members together.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to remember that municipal elected officials are not all out of the same box.
That's right.
We've got realtors. We got home builders. Mm-hmm. We got doctors. We got lawyers. We got homemakers.
Mm-hmm. Business owners.
We got stay-at-home dads. We got everything that they are serving their cities as municipal elected officials. And it's important for us to remember that sometimes when you've got a home builder as on your elected council, he might be not as happy about some regulations that were in the Comprehensive Planning Act as somebody else, or he might be in favor of limiting impact fees.
But he brings good balance to us in being able to give us his perspective so that we can anticipate those arguments over at the State House. I think about Mayor Brian Ramey in Westminster.
That's
he's a home builder.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's probably, as many are, he's conflicted sometimes as the mayor versus his profession, you know.
That's what municipal government is all about.
Exactly.
Is we've got a big bowl that's filled with a lot of different fish.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we got to make them swim in the right direction.
Exactly. That's I'm glad you said that. It's good to hear that the things that you taught us has continued
exactly
to be,
right.
We're continuing to pass along to folks today.
Now, Howard, you retired from the Municipal Association in 2008, and you said, I'm retiring. This is my retirement.
That's right.
And then you got back into it. Now you've said that you're going to retire and you're not going to run again. Are you for real?
Well, I'm for real.
Okay. Are you really going to retire?
It's 8 years later.
Right.
And I have passed some milestone birthdays recently that make you think about how long the future is.
Yeah.
I got back involved because of municipal issues, though.
Yep.
I was approached by a group that was opposed to the attempt to change the form of government in the city of Columbia to strong mayor. And they said, you know all of this. Why don't you lead the charge on that? So that got me back in. And then from there, your juices start flowing. I told Steve, I said, Steve, I would come up here and you wouldn't let me speak but 3 minutes. So I decided to run for election. And I could speak as long as I wanted to once I was on the dais with you. He laughed about that too. But I have enjoyed the 8 years.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed being able to use the experience that I had. One thing that still bugs me though is when I retired and got reelected, I wanted to get the Elected Official Institute badge.
Yes.
And Miriam would not let me have that.
I can't even believe
although I had taught the course for 20 years.
She made you go through the classes.
She made me go through it. So to get back with her, I made 100 on all of the tests, and I took notes on how bad some of the video was, and y'all needed to do better on this, that, and the other, and gave her a report.
Incredible.
That is amazing.
That is awesome.
I don't recall her talking about that critique.
I'm sure she kept it under wraps.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure none of us knew about that.
Probably find that buried deep in the archives somewhere.
Probably.
Mo, if you're listening, we're going to look for that.
We're going to find
she doesn't. Miriam told us she doesn't like listening to the podcast because we have too much banter. So, but I think she's probably warmed up to it. Surely she has.
I hope she has. She can play golf and listen to the podcast
exactly.
all at the same time.
That's exactly right. What advice, Howard, and we'll wrap up because we know you've got another appointment. What advice would you give to your successor on city council when you're gone and that person is sworn in?
Well, just be like Howard.
My first advice would be answer your telephone.
Yes.
Answer your telephone. Yes. I always use my own phone. I didn't take the city's phone. Most of them use two phones, personal phone and other.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so they just don't answer the city phone.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I got so many calls, because they'd call me and I'd answer. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So
that's
answer the phone call.
That's a good
do
one.
Your homework. Pay attention to your neighborhoods. Four of our people are elected from districts. Mm-hmm. And so they have particular neighborhoods that they have in their districts, and they need to be at each one of those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
The two of us that are at large kind of split it up.
Right. Yep.
So I go to a lot of them on this side of town, and Oddity goes to a lot of them on her side of town. But give the constituents the service they deserve. Do your homework before you get to the council meeting.
Mm-hmm. And take the Municipal Elected Officials Institute classes to understand to know what you don't know.
Come get educated.
Yeah,
be civil.
Right.
You know, take the civility pledge.
Yeah, take the
civility pledge. Y'all taking the civility pledge? Y'all done the civility pledge?
We passed a little ordinance on it.
So okay, good. Yeah. All right, that's helpful. That's helpful.
And we have been fairly civil.
Yeah, that's great.
Which is a great example.
Absolutely.
All right, now's the time for me to ask you this.
I know the
question.
Answer to that. It's the three rivers.
That's right. That's what I thought, but I don't know what the shapes represent.
And what is the shape that the three rivers are in?
Well, they make a Y. The three rivers.
They
too,
make a wing.
A wing.
They wing.
Oh, okay.
And Senator Gervais, back in 1786, when the city of Columbia was formed, say the citizens will rest safely under the wings of Columbus.
Huh.
Whoa.
Interesting.
And so that it represents a wing.
Well, now I'm going to have to go out and that's what the flag does. But do the rivers, the physical rivers themselves, are they kind of in the shape of a wing or not?
If you look at a map, it's just on the flag.
Because I was going to go on the satellite, on the Google Maps,
and
say,
You've
got the Saluda coming down, the Broad coming down, and then the Congaree as a result. So you can shape that into a...
Sure. Oh, one
if you wanted to.
The confluence of those two is the Congaree.
Is the Congaree.
That's something I didn't know.
And then where the Watery runs into the Congaree, it turns into the Santee River down into Lake Moultrie.
Wow.
Or Lake Marion.
A little geography lesson we didn't know we were going to get.
We could keep going down the river.
We could. Howard, thank you so much.
Great
I'm
to
probably
be with
still
you.
Going to call you.
We need to go back because I've got some good stuff in that speech that I'm working on.
Well, let's do it. I mean, I would love for you to come and talk about it, because
you could bring it and recite it, and that'll be a podcast.
I don't recite.
That's content. Content.
We all know that Howard does not recite.
But we can get that done. I think it'd be interesting for the people to see how we got messed up.
I agree. And how possibly we can fix it.
So that we don't repeat it.
Right.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Very good.
Thanks everybody for listening. Talk to you next week.
Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.